You're listening to Marketplace Weekend. Recently, the NAACP warned African-American travelers about flying American Airlines, saying they'd seen racial bias by the company's employees. And Papa John's, Uber, United Airlines, Chick-fil-A have all been boycotted or criticized by consumers. Sometimes it's about company policy. Sometimes about something the boss or an employee did. And nowadays, a viral Twitter complaint or a hashtag campaign can spiral quickly, making a company scramble. That can mean a public apology, an attempt to ride out negative publicity, or something else entirely. But we wanted to look into this idea of kind of regulating corporate behavior by consumer attention. So we turned to Braden King. He is a professor at the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern, and he studies boycotts. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
How much consumer activism is enough to move the needle when we're talking about organizing around a big company?
Well, there needs to be enough activism that it gets the attention of the public. I mean, that's really the main mechanism that activists use to drive social organizational change, is that they grab the public's attention and put the company in a negative spotlight, and then that causes the company to be concerned about its reputation.
What happens when they do this on a big scale? I mean, does it work?
It can. They're sometimes very effective. So protests and boycotts in particular have been shown to be very effective. In a number of studies that we've done, we found that around 25% of boycotts lead to some sort of public concession when they get national media attention. So it's really key that the boycotts get that media attention.
You did this research in 2011 that you just referenced. How has social media and the way we use it changed the way these things play out?
Well, one thing I've noticed is that there just are a lot more boycotts than there have ever been in the past. So Twitter, Facebook, other kinds of social media have lowered the cost of activists who want to organize. So it used to be that you had to have a really well-functioning organization to get a boycott off the ground, or at least have any chance of making a dent. But today, you know, all you need is to be able to organize with other people of a similar mind on Facebook, and you don't even have to have an organization behind you. So one thing that it's done is it's lowered the cost of organizing, and because of that, boycotts have proliferated. The other thing that it's done is that it has made it much easier for them to get the word out to the media and to other third parties who care about these things. So now the media is oftentimes, and I speak about, you know, newspapers, television, radio, they are really kind of forced to pay attention because the boycotts first create a buzz on social media.
You know, when we think about boycotts or protests as a form of regulation, really, is that the right way to think about them? You know, sort of consumers regulating companies via what they buy and don't buy?
Yeah. I mean, I would add an important caveat to that, and that is that the regulation really comes from the pressure of just negative attention and the potentially negative effects that that has on reputation. It's not clear that customers actually do anything at all at the time of a boycott. So, you know, there's just not a lot of evidence that consumers actually follow through with their boycott. Consumers, if you want to say that the boycotters themselves are consumers, which they usually are, aren't oftentimes the people who buy the products of the companies that they're going after. Really, what the company is most afraid of and what seems to be happening is that it creates this reputational threat that could affect their long-term brand management. And so they're concerned about consumers in the future and what they might think of the company if it becomes associated with a negative behavior. You know, there's no evidence, very little evidence, that consumers are actually changing their behavior in reaction to boycotts.
So it's not something that is, you know, affecting a profit and loss statement. It's much more about just sort of the image of the company?
Yeah, and long-term risk management. So when companies speak of this among themselves, they talk about, you know, our reputation is a key part of our long-term risk management. If we screw up our reputation because we don't handle this boycott or other kinds of public relations crises in a good way, then this could really come back to haunt us in the long term.
You know, one question I have when we think about this as sort of almost regulating behavior, should consumers be the ones to do this, or do we risk sort of moving into an area of vigilantism as opposed to sort of having the government be a regulatory body?
It's a good question. And, you know, I guess really what we're asking for is, you know, how much do we care about what activists think? Do activists who are not the majority of consumers, who are not usually elected officials, do they have the right to sort of drive what the market does? And, you know, clearly they do. They're not breaking any laws. And, you know, we live in a society where we believe people have the right to free expression. I think also that what they've realized, what activists have realized over the years, is that their voice matters because they can do something that can harm a company. But by doing that, the changes that they affect is to help align companies with the social values of different communities. If there are other values out there represented by different communities that run contrary to those, then those people are also able and free to express themselves in a similar way. So I don't see this as vigilantism so much as I see it as, you know, the market operating in a society in which activists have the right of free expression.
Braden King studies boycotts, and he's the Max McGraw Chair of Management at the Kellogg School at Northwestern. Thank you.
Thank you.